Okay. The next year we did was on the Shem HaMafurish, how we use the special name of Hashem. So you have over there that the idea is Shitas Rambam. He says that the Shem HaMafurish, when we refer to it, is what we call in English the Tetragrammaton. That's the Shem Yud Kei Vav Kei. That's his Shem HaMafurish, according to the Rambam Shita. He says that in Mor Nevuchim, many times, that's what's called, the Shem HaMafurish. Rashi says the Shem Rabba is the 42-letter name of Hashem, which he calls the Shem HaMafurish, right? That's the 42-letter. And Rashi learns the Gemara in Kedushin 71a, the 42-letter name mentioned there was the Shem HaMafurish, against Shita Sarama, who understands it differently as being a unique and distinct name. Okay, that's usually the Shita Sarama versus the Shita Sarashi in that sugya. We had more analysis over there. We tied it into the Kohanim and the Birkas Kohanim. We talked about which names the Kohanim was given, to be able to bless the people with, so on and so forth. And then we also talked about in this sugya, after dealing with the Kohanim, we spoke about we slide into the Urim V'Tumim. The Urim V'Tumim didn't record for some reason. I don't know why. It didn't work online. The Urim V'Tumim, how it operated, it was placed in the Choshen, and how the Kohen Gadol was able to communicate with Hashem through it. So you have the main pasuk in Tzaveh, V'nasata l'choshen ha-mishpat, es ha-urim v'es-ha-tumim. So the main sugya of Urim V'Tumim is Yoma 73b. That's the main sugya of Urim V'Tumim. Ramban, Nachmanides, gives the famous mashal on the pasuk in Tzaveh, Kav Ches Lamed, how that process works. So the question was, who would attack the Kananim first? So the letters Yehuda Ya'ale would pop up. They would light up. So how did the Kohen know what was the correct order to scramble the words? So that was the Tumim. The Tumim was, he had the insight to know what was the right word to put where, the right order of the letters as they would pop up. Okay, we said the interesting opinion of the Baal Shem Tov. The Baal Shem Tov, the Parshas Tetzaveh, says on this, Yesh Bezeh Sod Amok, there is a very deep secret here. It's known that the Urim V'Tumim, there were 22 letters. So how do you get an answer to a phrase that had a few things repeated? Like hell, Halech LeBavel. How would you get that repeater? For example, right? Who's going to win the Super Bowl, right? We discussed Tampa Bay Buccaneers. How does that come up? You have too many kufs and cuffs. How are you going to get the answer to pop up? So the Baal Shem Tov's Shita is that you can answer simple, by the way. That's what Tumim was. Tumim was, even though you didn't get every single mamish thing, you still were able to complete the rest of the letters. Baal Shem Tov said, within each letter of the 22 letters that were on there, there were 22 more letters, because those are the miluim de miluim. Baal Shem Tov understands every letter has its miluim. You know what miluim is? When you say aleph, it's aleph, lamed, pei. Right. And that further breaks down. Miluim, miluim. That fits perfectly. Well, we call it the avnei shoam, the avnei miluim. That's where that language comes from. That's the miluim, the filled out word. So he applies that pshat. And we discuss this idea of how you could now use this to answer whenever you see a Maimer Chazal that says the entire Torah is there. Like the Aseret HaDibros from Sajagon is the entire Torah. So the Baal Shem Tov says, how is the entire Torah there? So either you can understand it as cliff notes, or you can understand it as the highlight reel, or you can understand like the Baal Shem Tov, that within each thing is the miluim, explains every single thing, is the miluim. Okay, and you have this application all over. Then we talked about the importance of letters, osius in Hebrew, Sarab Sadaka Kona Lublin, the Kabbalah of Hebrew, how Hebrew is what gives everything life. This is not a table, this is a shulchan, and it's being sustained in the world by a shin lamed ches nun, or shin vav lamed ches nun. That's what's keeping it alive. If you were to see the DNA of everything, you'd see that's what sustains it. Rav Kook talked about everything is imbued with the letters of life. He spoke about Rav Kook in Orot, page 11 and 12 on that. We talked about some interesting, a little bit of, we didn't really get into the lumdus behind the Urim V'Tumim, but you should know there's a Rambam there, based on Bechira 4.1, that even the Urim V'Tumim that were in the Bais Sheni, he said they didn't answer B'derech Ruach HaKodesh. So you have to figure out what in the world they did if they didn't answer Ruach HaKodesh. Okay, fine. Let's continue. After the Shem Mefurish, we're talking about what shame that was used for the Birkas Kohanim. We talked about the Chov of bowing down by the mentioning of the Amiras Hashem. When you would say the special name of Hashem, the Chiyuv of Hashtach Havaya, which is Yoma 66, Samach Vav Menalv 66a, and that was the end of that sugya, the Shem Mefurish and the Urim B'Tumim. Okay, let's continue. The next shir was about Meiser Behema and Behema B'Shutfus. This was a good sugya. We said that in order to be chayev, when your animal, let's say, hits another guy's animal, so it has to be shor re'eyu, excluding me'ila, which is mamon gavoa. That's not shor re'eyu, it's mamon gavoa. So the Gemara in Bava Kama 12b says, okay, Me'ila no, but stuff which is still hektish is going to be an issue. So we said Rav Yossi Aglili holds that Kochim Kailim is Mamun Bailim and not Mamun Gavoa. Kochim Kailim is Mamun Bailim and not Mamun Gavoa. So we then said, but wait a second, but we know that you can't Mekadesh someone with a Shlomim. And if it's Mamun Bailim, if it belongs to the owner, how come you can't Mekadesh someone, a woman, with a Korban Shlomim? So we said, even Rav Yossi Aglili agrees that after Shechita, it's Mamun Gavoa. Why? Because Mishulchan Gavoa Kazachu. Because you were Zoche from the Shulchan Gavoa. That's why, that's where they got it from. Mishulchan Gavoa Kazachu. Okay, that's the main, that's what the Gemara says. So what do we do with that? So, the Emurim, the innards, which are burnt on the Mizbeach, the sacrificial parts, that's a Machlokas. Shita Mikubetza says the Emurim is Mamun Gavoa. Many other late Rishonim, early Rishonim, and Achronim say it's Mamun Bailim. So what was the sugya we dealt with here? We then went to a Gemara in Bechoros 53a, where it said, Meiser Behema Eino Noeg Bemukdashin. There's no Meiser Behema Bemukdashin, with things which were set aside already. So the Gemara in Bechoros 53b says, what the Havamina? Of course, it's not yours. Of course, no Meiser Behema, which is an animal that's hektish. It's not yours. The firstborn animal, that animal, it belongs to hektish. So the Gemara says that a pasuk's needed to exempt Kochim Kalim from Meiser Behema. Because according to Rav Yossi Aglili, what? According to Rav Yossi Aglili, it's still Mamun Bailim. So we then ask the following question. Why would a pasuk be needed if the Emurim are considered Mamun Gavoa? It's Hektish Meshutaf. And we assume that a Behema Beshutvis, partnership Behema, is also Pater from Meiseris. So the question we asked, this was the big question of the shiur, why do I need a pasuk to exempt Kochim Kalim from Meiser Behema? It already would have been Potter from Meiser Behema because the Emurim are Mamun Gavoa, and therefore it's a Hektish with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it would have been Potter from Meiser at that point already. And we discussed many different answers. The exemption of Shutfis is only when the Shutfis is in the limb, a spot where a Trefus could occur, the Emurim isn't. We discussed seven or eight different answers, not going to go into it now, but you should remember the Kasha. The Kasha is a famous one. That how in the world, why do you need a pasuk to exempt Kochim Kalim from Meiser Behema? It's already a Behema of a Shutvis, and therefore there's no possibility of Meiser Behema anyways. Okay, famous question. The next year we discussed, the Lundish one was Kinyan Mos Behektish. What was that about? The Gemara in Bab Metzia 47b says we hold Maos Konos Midaraisa. Maos Arkona Midaraisa. So why isn't money good enough? Why do we establish all these kinyanim? So Chazal came along and said, we need Meshicha. You know why? Because we don't want the person to say, oh, I'm sorry, you paid already, but it's not here. Nisrafu Chtecha Baaliyah. Your stuff burnt already upstairs in my attic. I'm sorry. Okay, we looked at the Gemara in Chulin 83a, which says the Gemara in Chulin, four times a year there's a mitzvah to eat meat. So the Chacham came along and kept the law at Midaraisa, and most in those instances works without Meshicha. Okay, in those instances, when you needed meat, when there's a mitzvah to get meat, there's no need for Meshicha by there. You just pay and you're good. Pay and that's it. Fine, and we saw that by the Eishal Avram, the Buchacha Rebbe says, so too by an Esrog Shel Mitzvah, the same din. Chazal said, by an Esrog Shel Mitzvah, you don't need Meshicha. By the things which are in the Torah, Chazal never applied the rule for that you need Meshicha. Keep it at the Daraisa, pay your money, and so on and so forth. The Gemara in Kedushin 28b says there's a Chiddush Hadin that by Hektish, it's Kone B'Kesef. Hektish is Kone by Kesef. For example, a treasurer buying animals for the Tamidim, he could buy it by just paying for it. Okay? He can get it just by, he doesn't need Meshicha. To acquire it for the Beis HaMikdash, you don't need Meshicha. So why do you need a special din? Why do I need a special din by Hektish if mitzvahs in general are Kone B'Kesef? Right? If the whole premise of the Gemara, like we just said in Chulin 83a, that by mitzvahs Chazal kept it at the Daraisa, that Kesef is good enough. If Kesef is good enough by the Daraisa, why did the Gemara in Kedushin have to tell me there's a special din by Hektish that Kesef is good enough? By any Daraisa, Kesef is good enough. So we then again discussed five or six answers. One answer we gave is that maybe it's not the Chachamim. Maybe the Chacham didn't always go back to the Din Torah and got rid of the need for Meshicha by a mitzvah. Maybe they only did it. Here's the line. But makom shemeikir hagzera de meshicha lo hayatzarech ligzor. When there's no need for the gzera of meshicha to begin with. Like example, when you're not buying something specific, something that's not mesuyan, that's where it never applied. So the Ran says the leniency by Chulin was because people always look to take their meat right away. You don't pay for meat online and then pick it up a few days later back then. You went straight and you picked up your meat as you paid for it. So when you needed it right away, certainly for the Chagim, there was no need to, it was never a discussion of Mashiach there or not. So that's why we need a special din by Korban. That's exactly why you need a special din by Korban. Another answer was that Chazal maintained the Halacha Midaraisa of Mo's Konas, only in the sense that the seller can't back out. But it doesn't mean it's the buyer's yet. That's not what it means that it was suspended and it's mine automatically. There's still stuff I need to do. It just means the guy can no longer back out. Okay, there was a lot of important terutzim that we gave to that. You could see that share. That share is posted online. Then we talked about the special din of Hadlakas Neiris in the Mikdash. Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvahs focuses on how the mitzvah is Lahadlik Neiris B'chol Yom. Lahadlik neiris b'chol yom. What that means is then, that would make all the other stuff that goes into the candles just the machshirei mitzvah. Just the machshirei mitzvah. So the Gemara says, we asked, the Rambam in Hilchas Tamidim, where he quotes the halachas, Gimel Yud, he says the halacha starts without any mention of atlaka. He only goes into dishun and the hatava, the cleaning out and the preparing. And then at the end, he shtups in the thing about hadlak over. That was question number one. Then we asked, what's the nature of the hatava itself? Is it a machshirei mitzvah? What is it? On one hand, the Gemara Menachos implies that it's just a preparation for the hadlaka. But then again, the Rambam put it there front and center. So how does the Rambam understand it? Many questions. We asked 5, 6, 7 questions over here. So we said the following mahalach within the Rambam. After all these questions, the following mahalach. Rambam views the geder of the Hatavas HaNeiros in the following way. When the Torah says, Baboker, Baboker, the Heitivu Es HaNeiros, in the morning where they were Meitiv the Neiros, Rambam says that's really referring to the Hadlaka. Why is Hadlaka called Hatava in the Torah? Why is Hadlaka called Atar? So the Rambam comes in and tells you that the Geder HaMitzvah isn't really Hadlaka. The Geder HaMitzvah is fixing and improving the lights so that they can be illuminating properly. That's the point. Or in other words, Hatava includes the preparation of the candle via cleaning it, placing the oil, placing the wick, and also the Hadlaka. The Hadlaka is one of the components of preparing that which is lit. That's what the word hatava means. It means l'shaper es haner b'hachana u'b'hadlaka shela acher ha'hachana. So the hachanas are they're not a hechsher mitzvah. They're a chelik in the mitzvah hatava. They're each branches, the lighting, the dishut, they're each branches in the mitzvah of hatava saneros. Hadlaka is it's the chelik ha'acheron of the ma'aseh mitzvah. It's the last piece of the whole puzzle. It's the last piece of the whole puzzle. And we discussed that it possibly goes against Rav Chaim. Rav Chaim understood that there's no Maisa Mitzvah at all. So how do you understand Hadlaka Lava Voda, plugging it all in, so on and so forth, understanding the two together. Okay? Now, next we discussed, do you need a kli? Do you need a kli for the menorah? Or can I just lay it out there? The lights, let me lay my lights right out there on a table. Do I need a kli for a menorah? So the Avnei Nezer says that the kli where you put the oil and the pesila in, the wick in, that's bichlal haner. It's all included in the ner. Meaning it needs to have a shem kli. And if not, it's not ruy ladlaka, for it's not a ner. Ner means I have the cup, I have the wick, I have the whole 9 yards. We said, where does the Avnei Nezer get that from? He got that from Rav Avram Azulai, the Chida, in the Chesed Lavram, where he mentions that there were 15 Kalim, which were Roy Chida's father. Chida's father. Where the 15 Kalim, which are Roy for Ner Chanukah. Okay? He begins the count with gold, with silver, with brass. He goes finally down to the bottom where he gets the tree. And he says, in all 15 Kalim, if they can't stand on their own, then they're not good. So Avinazer infers from there that whatever is not fit to be used for Chanukah, whatever is not fit to be called a kli, meaning it doesn't stand, it's not a shame kli. If it loses its shame kli, it's not good for lighting Hanukkah candles. So Rav Vosner came up with the wild conclusion that would ruin almost everybody's Hanukkah candles. What comes out from there, if I use wax candles at home and I don't put it in a kli, I just put them out just like I don't put them in a kli, I'm not yotze. So, and moreover, he said the following. He said that if you put the oil and the wick in a glass holder, which itself, glass is not good for, as one of the kalim, it's not considered an official kli in the list of the 15 kalim, so then you're using something inferior to the silver menorah itself. It might not be good. Meaning when you put the glass in between your silver menorah and the candle, the glass, and the silver menorah, it's being bottled to the glass. It's using the glass as its holder, and that's, you're using something of a lesser grade than the menorah itself, than your silver menorah. You thought you're being all fancy and hither, put this ungepatch, the menorah, in the window, and you're putting in the glass holders above it to keep it clean. Meanwhile, you're using the glass, not the silver, which is a lower, inferior quality. So Rav Vosner says that can't be. He says that's it's the glass is bottled to the silver beneath it. You're using a silver menorah. You're using a hider menorah. And then Rav Vosner argued that the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah does not need a kli. He argues with the Avdi Nezer. And he gave two reasons why it doesn't need a kli. One, he says the main Avdi Nezer is mainly based on a Gemara in Yoma, 24a, where there are four ways to a Zaris Chayev Misa, either in the Zrika, the Haktar, the Nisach HaMayan, Nisach HaYayin, and the Gemara goes to that whole thing over there. So at the end of the day, you see, Hadlaka isn't Avoda. Gemara says, Hadlaka isn't Avoda.
So what's
that? That's the Kasha this year before. The Hadlaka by the Avoda might just be the Hatava, the preparing it. And we suggested at the end that just the lighting is just the final clincher on the whole thing. Either way, Rav Vosner goes through a few reasons why he disagrees with the Abnezer. We discussed that in that shir. And then he discussed the Abnezer's comparison of Neiros Chanukah to Neiros Menorah. Is there such a link between the two? Do we have to mamish match the dinim of the Neiros that we have with the Neiros Menorah Shabbos HaMikdash? Okay, that's a separate issue. The next shir was about the Chanukah Samizbeach. Right, we discussed the famous Gemara in Shabbos 21b, My Chanukah. So the Marsha says, My Chanukah. So he then quotes the Ran, who then says, Chanu b'kaf hei. They rested on the 25th. So what kind of resting is this here? They didn't make this a yontif. Rather, it's called Chanukah. Why, says the Marsha? Not because what the Ran said, Chanu b'kaf hei. It's rather because Chanukah Samizbeach happened then. That's why. Chanukah Samizbeach. So we raise the Tzarachian, have the Chasam Sofer. Chasam Sofer says, this is a little bit of a Tzarachian. Why? Because what was the first day of the Hakrava, the bringing the offerings and the burning the stuff? According to Menachos 58, you need to first have a Chinuch Mizbeach. You need to first inaugurate the Mizbeach before you put anything on it. So if they're mechanech the Mizbeach and the Menorah on the 24th, then Chanukah should actually be celebrating the day before. And if the beginning was the 25th, then they couldn't light until the 26th. Remember, we posed that whole conundrum of the Chasim Sofer, and Rav Vosner dealt with it himself, and he dealt with defending the Shitas Aran against the Shitas Marsha. We'll leave it aside for now. That was a very specific Chanukah shir. Okay. Then I shared with you online, actually, if you look on the blog, I shared with you after I sat in on Rav Schechter's introduction to Kachim. He gave an overview of Kachim. It was an amazing hour and a half where he covered a lot of key sugyas with regards to Kachim. That you could see online. If you go back to the emails, you just look in your inbox, you should be able to find it there. Discussed Sakid Mekadesh, how the knife itself is Mekadesh, Korban Yochid versus Korban Sibur. He discussed the difference between Machshava versus Dibor. In one fell swoop, a lot of the things that we've been discussing. How to distinguish between different Korbanos, different classifications for Lila, two nights, one night, so on, different classifications for Korbanos. Okay. Then, because the Daf Yomi was in Hurrius, we took a detour. We did a little bit of Kachim that finds itself in Hurrius. And the first sugya we talked about was a chatas shemesu ba'aleha, the classic case of a chatas where its owner died. Chatas shemesu ba'aleha is a special din, a chatas where the owner dies. So the Gemara in Horia says that when the second Beis HaMikdash was built, the Jewish people brought 12 korban chatas to atone for the sins of each of the tribes that were around in the time of Tzidkiyahu. So the Gemara says, wait a second, How could they do that? That's a chatas shemesu ba'aleha. The owners who it's going for are already long dead. So Rav Papa had a great answer. Tzibor lo mesa. Kaha lo mesa. That it's going for the tzibor. Tzibor never dies. Individuals die. The public never dies. And therefore the korban chatas could be brought for a previous previous generation. Tosus took it one step further and said, no, the issue of chatas shemesu ba'aleha is when I, let's say Fred designates a korban chatas and he passes away. He designated it, therefore he's got to be the one to bring it. It's finished. But if it was never designated for these tribes while they were alive, someone wanted to do something for their behalf after they died, that's a whole different parsha. It's comparing apples and oranges. Okay. Then we discussed a other sugya. There's a very complicated stipler we did there. You have to see the share line. But next we discussed within that sugya, who's the real owner of a korban in general? The donor, the one who donates the korban to the Beis HaMikdash, or the one who has the obligation? Meaning, if a friend of mine needs to bring a korban, so I give a korban to the Beis HaMikdash on his behalf, who's considered the real bailim over the korban? It's being shechted for him. He needs the ola. He needs the chatas, not me. I'm good. I just bought it for him. So who's really considered the bailim, and why that chaps the nafkamina? Oh, that's exactly the nafkamina. Kilos Yaakov says the whole nafkamina, this whole discussion, is let's say if a person gives money to Hektish for the purpose of public korbanos, so does that person need to be alive or not at the time the public korban is offered? It's a great question. If you say chaptus shemesis ba'aleh, it's done. If he's considered the baal, once he dies, all the money he donated for going to korbanos can't be used. So Stipus says, of course, that's not the case. We assume, and one answer could be like we said in the before, that it's for the tzibor. It's a totally different din. Tzibor lo mesa might be a difference. Okay, then we talked about... Yeah.
If someone brings a chatas or korban on behalf of an individual who's already died. Individual already died. And then, we're saying...
So that would be totally nismach locus. If it's a din in the bailim, then, okay, the guy who was supposed to go for a die, but I'm really the bailim, so I could bring it for whatever reason. There might not be a din of chatas shemesa ba'aleha. Stipus says that straight out. But if it's
a... There's another behud on that. I went right by it and didn't know.
That what? Do you remember? On this? Chatas shemesa ba'aleha by korban tzibor.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know it.
No, where the friend or the friend was hired.
And this is the friend died or whatever it was. Okay, good.
Tied into Zagna's argument a little bit fun of?
What? No, because this is a case where the friend wanted it. All these cases are where the friend is asking it. Yeah, he wanted it. There's no Zagna's argument fun up here. Next, we had the sugya of Dichoy by Kochim. Remember that sugya, Dichoy by Kochim? So, for example, the Gemara in Zvachim 12a, Rabbi Yochanan says that according to Ben Becerra, a korban Pesach shecht in the morning of Erev Pesach is no good. Why? Since only part of the day is nearer as the korban Pesach. Let's just explain the basic concept. Dichoy means if an animal was good to go, it was good to be used, and something happened to it that temporarily made it no good, and then you made it good again. That's the worst. That's nira v'nitche v'chozer v'nira. But when you had an animal that was never nira, it started off on a bad foot, and then you made it good, there's a lot more leniency there in using that animal. There's a lot more leniency there. Okay, so we had a three-way answer to the kasha of Rav Yochanan's shita. This was hard. Rav Yochanan's shita on, this might have been the third hardest shir we did. Remember, I discussed the two hardest I discussed last week. This might have been the third hardest. The one was Machshava by Kochim, was one of the hardest ones. Rav Yochanan on Yud Bey Zamed Aleph has a case of Shutfis, and Rav Yochanan has a train of thought, he has a reasoning, that when the partner is Makdish the first half of the animal, so he doesn't have the ability to Makdish the second half, right? It's the other guy's second half. So what happens is, the animal is considered Dichoy, right? Because you're Makdish it, but it was Doche from being used for Hektish. So the Gemara infers three things from there. One, live animals can be permanently disqualified. There's a way to permanently disqualify. Balchayim nidachim. Number two, an animal that was initially unfit to be a korban can't be made better. That's what the Gemara says. Dichoy miikara have dichoy. Goodbye, Charlie. And there's a concept of dichoy bedamim. Dichoy in the monetary element. That since he couldn't get access to the monetary half of the animal, even though he was makdish the animal is done. Okay, so that was the famous three things the Gemara came out with. Then we said, what's the bigger chiddush? Dichoy mi'ikara, something which was dichoy from the get-go, or dichoy bedamim, That was a big kasha. And you have a machlokas Rashi and Rambam to try to figure out what was the bigger chiddush. We said, what's the machlokas over there that they're fighting about? Semantical. The stipler gave his own pshat of how to understand the difference between dichoy b'damim and dichoy by kachim. Okay, then we discussed the next year was dichoy by kachim versus shar mitzvahs. Dichoy by kachim versus shar mitzvahs. We discussed by a sukkah becoming dichoy. We discussed the concept of by a lulav. You know, when it grows, starts growing berries and you cut it off. There's a classic case of dichoy by mitzvahs. That's the most famous case of dichoy, even more than kachim. The most famous case of dichoy is there. And then Rashi didn't make a distinction between biyadol asakein regarding mitzvahs, whether you have the ability to fix it or you don't have the ability to fix it. Biyadol asakein or ain biyadol asakein, no different. Then we discussed shita satosus. Tosus did make a difference of biyadol asakein. Fine, and to summarize the laws of dichoy by mitzvahs, here is the summary. We first raised two questions. One, does the concept of dichoy apply to all the mitzvahs? So we said maybe there's no concept of a cheftza of mitzvah like there is a concept of cheftza de kedusha. Maybe we said there's a difference between the two. And the bottom line shita we said that for Rashi, he disagrees with Tosfos and says there's no distinction that there's no application by mitzvahs. Almost no application of it being able to go back. The famous case of dichoy, I would say maybe besides lulav, the most famous case of dichoy, if you ever had a trivia case, is a case of where kisoy hadam, where you have to cover the thing with blood. Let's say the wind blew the blood, the dirt onto the blood. So kisoy hadam was already fulfilled in the melee. You missed the mitzvah. Let's say it covered it over. What's going to be over there? So can you go ahead and then it uncovered? Can you redo it? That's a classic case. Menachos and Fulin discussed the classic case of dichoy. Then we did an interesting piece. Which was the concept of mehera yabane hamikdash. Mehera yabane hamikdash. What do we say by that sugya? So Rav Hirschsprung. This was the question of Rav Hirschsprung, right? The great. He used to be able to pin test. He was famous for doing the pin test in the Gemara. Point to anywhere, he could tell you what was the line. So Rav Hirschsprung asked the following question, a fantastic question. In the Sifrei Kabbalah, it says that in the future, after Bias HaMashiach, the halacha is going to follow Beis Shammai, right? And not Beis Hillel. However, where do they get that from? The Gemara in Beitza, Hey Amid Beis, seems to clearly go against that. Why? Because in the future, the Gemara says in Beitza Hamibes, a Beitza Shenolda B'yomtav Harishon Shal Rosh Hashanah is not going to be usher not just on that day, but also on the second day of Rosh Hashanah. In the future, B'la'asid Lavo. Okay? So Rav Hirschsprung says, what do you mean in the future? If it's usher on the first day, it's going to be usher also on the second day. Beit Shammai's halacha itself, according to Beit Shammai in the Gemara and the Mishnayos and Beitza, a Beitza Shayolda B'yamtuf, Muteris Ba'oso Hayom. So what do you mean? When it's one day in the future, when Rosh Hashanah is going to be merged into one day, a Beitza Asur Lazeh Asur on the second day. According to Beit Shammai, it's already Muter on that day. You're speaking in Beis Hillel terms. If we assume that in the future, halacha is going to be like Beis Hillel, so what's the pshat? What does that mean? What Beitza Shalom is a Muter Bezeh? So we suggested the following answer. That what? We saw the Yerushalmi. This was the first a Mishnah in Maaser Sheni, Perek Hey, Mishnah Beis. That Kerem Ravai, Ole LeYerushalayim, Mahalach Yom L'chol Tzad. How far do you have to go in bringing the Kerem Ravai? V'tanai haya davar, She'em Asai She'yirtu, Yachsar Adavar L'komo Shehaya. Rab Yossi Amar Mishachar of Beis Hamikdash Haya Tanai Hazev Tanai Haya Emas Shemayim Zid Yachzor Davar LeKamosh Haya. That it was only applies when the Beis Hamikdash is around. The Halachas of Kerem Ravai and how far you need to go applies when the Beis Hamikdash was around. So the Yerushalmi said Amar Ravacha Zos Omeres Shebeis Hamikdash Asid Lihibanos Kodem LaMalchus Beis David. Ravacha infers from this Mishnah that the Beis Hamikdash is going to be there before the return of the Malchus Beis David. So what do we do with that Yerushalmi? Right, what do we do with that Yerushalmi? So even though according to the Mekubalim, the halacha is going to be like Beis Shammai and not like Beis Hillel, that's taloi on the Zman of Bias HaMashiach and not on the Zman of Binyan Beis HaMikdash. Right? You understand the difference? two different things. Bias HaMashiach is different than Binyan Beis HaMikdash. According to the Yerushalmi Rav Acha's Shita, Binyan Beis HaMikdash is going to happen before Bias HaMashiach. And therefore, when it says Lasid Lavo, one day Yantiv, Lasid Lavo in the future, when it's merged as one day Rosh Hashanah, because you have the Beis HaMikdash back, that's not a question. The question of Rav Hirschbaum shouldn't even be able to, shouldn't even get off the ground. Okay?
When's
so,
this?
What?
When's the question, Shaila?
We answered this. We said, I don't know. I forgot. I might have seen it somewhere. I don't remember.
Was
I don't remember.
Was 2 days also in time of Beis Midrash?
What?
Was Rosh Hashanah 2 days in time of Beis Midrash also?
Rosh Hashanah was 200.
Yeah, it was 2 days because of the...
Yeah, but the Gemara says when the Beis Midrash is rebuilt, it's going to go to
right.
One day.
Right.
It's going to go to one day, Yom HaRifta. Because the calendar is going to be back aligned.
I was looking. I didn't finish it this morning. The Gemara
yes.
Says, the Asid Lovet, it didn't going to be like Abana Tom. He's talking about filling. We shouldn't put on our Abana Tom filling now because everybody holds like Rashi.
Oh, but in the
like
future,
Rashi,
it flips over.
Because if you're going to do the film, you got to do 64 types of filling. But he said, but Asid Lovet, and then it'll be like.
Because we'll be able to clarify which was the right
and
one.
And we're not going to put on Rashi?
I didn't finish the thing. It was pretty late. So,
okay. Very good. Fine.
That way, but I'm not sure.
The Rambam writes, though, Melech HaMashiach Asid La'amod U'Lahachzir Malchus Beis David Liyoshna L'Memshala HaRishona Ubone HaMikdash. So we said, according to the Rambam, this doesn't work. Because according to the Rambam, the way he sees the future playing out is the Binyan Beis HaMikdash is not going to fall, is not going to come out. But we gave a Lamdash explanation to the Rambam. You already have a Chalos Shem Binyan Beis HaMikdash. The Zman of Binyan Beis HaMikdash is already in place at that time. Already at that place. But we said that that's Rav Acha's Shita. It's different than the other Shita. We then made a following historical point. What was the historical point we made? So we talked about right, Julian, you know, Julian the Roman Emperor is also called Julian the Apostate. So we said about Julian the Apostate was famous and he was very controversial. This is already during the Constantine Empire. The Constantine Empire already dynasty was already a totally different phase and it had ramifications for the Jewish people. Why? There's historically an attempt to rebuild the Jewish Beis HaMikdash. It's not talked about too much. In 363, apparently, it's not long before Julian left Antioch to send his campaign against Persia, to fight against Persia, he ordered the Beis HaMikdash to rebuild. Why? Because he was trying to establish, he was fighting still Christianity, so to speak, that there should be many religions. He's trying to build the Beis HaMikdash. There should be a Beis HaMikdash there and so on and so forth. Why didn't it happen? There was apparently an earthquake in 363, and that was a sign that it shouldn't be built. The deeper explanation is probably the Jews were ambivalent at that time to this project to begin with. They thought maybe sabotage happened, that when the earthquake happened, there was a fire. The Christian historians at the time thought it was divine intervention. So what did we do with that? So we said the following. Rav Acha was in the same time of Caesar Julian. And we find that Rav Acha, many times in the Yerushalmi, is entertaining the possibility of a Beis HaMikdash before the Bias HaMashiach. Why? Because Rav Acha is the only one in the Yerushalmi who relates to Julian, who refers to even Julian. So in Rav Acha's mind already, against every Shita and Shas and the Rambam and everyone else, he saw the Beis HaMikdash before even Mashiach happening. We mentioned that idea, that possibility, why it exists for him. And then we went through a possible answer to Rav Hirschbaum's question from Rav Schechter. Rav Schechter's idea of, based on his essay in Eretz Tzvi, Gedrei HaMedina be'Eretz Yisrael Milchamoseha. He wrote that in the Ora Mizrach, which was the Mizrahi journal. Rav Schechter had a whole piece about the order of the way the Rambam believes the land is going to be established. That Malchus Yisrael needs to be before Binyan Beis HaMikdash. So he understood, actually, Rav Schechter points out, it's three phases, and this makes everything work out nicely. There's Malchus Beis David, there's Binyan Beis HaMashiach, Binyan Beis HaMikdash, and then there's Bias HaMashiach. It's a trifecta. That makes everybody work out. Yeah.
When you say it happens in different stages, then over a long period of time, or like after?
It's a gradual progression. Like the Yerushalmi says, Kima kachi agula, Kima, the Yerushalmi in Brachos, Kima, Amar of Abba ben Chalafta, kachi agula, Kima, kima, like the
little by little
it happens. Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cook always spoke about this. This is one of his famous themes, that it's like the birth pangs. The Chevli Mashiach is that's the kima. It's slowly, gradually, the baby's coming out.
That's why he called it Atchalta Degula.
Atchalta Degula. And by the way, I spoke to someone who's very close with one of the Gabayim of Rav Yashiv. So Rav Yashiv, he heard him say in the room, Rav Yashiv himself saying, that there's no doubt that what Yom Ha'atzmaut refers to is Aschalta de Geula. There's no doubt about it. You can't say what happened on that day is not, there's not Nisim v'Niflos. That's what he said in that room over there. And I saw in Rav Dessler himself, in Michtav Melyahu, Rav Dessler says straight out, in Chelek Dalid, he says what we're seeing Bismanenu is definitely Aschalta de Geula. So, and Rav Dessler is the father of what we call, from late Achronish Hashkafa. So he says it straight out. It says the words Aschalta de Geula. Right now, we're seeing Bismanenu is Aschalta de Geula.
When did he say,
I forgot what year it was, but he was referring to what's going on in Israel. He was referring to, it was near the end of his life, what was going on in Israel at the time. I don't know if he was talking about the building that was happening before 48. I don't remember. I have to look again the page. But he said what we're seeing right now is Mamish Aschalta de Geula. Okay.
63 years, it's Kima Kima.
What? Yeah, it's Kima Kima. Okay. Fine. Now, we talked next about Kiddush Yadayim V'Raglayim, the concept of Kiddush Yadayim V'Raglayim. So what's the makor? So the Perek Chavtes in Shmos has the makor for Kiddush Yadayim V'Raglayim, how you wash your hand, how you do the whole process. So Rambam seemed to indicate there's two dinim here. There's a mitzvah saseh of Kiddush Yadayim V'Raglayim, and then there's a psul avoda, right? There's double whammy. There's a mitzvah saseh and a psul avoda. We talked about how, according to the Rambam, mitzvahs aseh number lamed gimel, whether the big day kahuna are mitzvahs on their own right, or are they machshire mitzvah. Ramban, Nachman, and he's always says it's just a hechshire mitzvah. When it comes to washing hands, there the Ramban doesn't say anything on the Rambam. So why should there be a chiluk? Why by the washing the hands and the legs, that's not machshire mitzvah, but the begadim are machshire mitzvah? So we saw from the chedushay Rav Aryeh Leib Malin, that he says, Yesh Lachkor, is the Chiyuv to Mekadesh Yadav Raglav, so that the hands and legs will be holy to prepare for the Avoda? Or even do we say the Etzem Maisa Kiddush is Mechayev? So Nachmanides has to be holding that they have an element of a Etzem Kiddush, of an independent Kiddush of its own right, separate from the Avoda. There's an independent sanctification happens over here. We discussed the washings on Yom Kippur. We said how those are different dinims. The brisker of the Chedushei Agriz and Avodas Yom Kippur says a fundamental difference between the Kiddush Yadayim Stam and Yom Kippur. They're not the same thing. The one by Yom Kippur is interspersed by each section, totally different. We discussed, is it considered an avoda? If it's avoda, you have to do it while standing. Gemara in Zvachim, Yutas, and Mabez. What about a chatzitza? So Rambam in Beis HaMikdash, Hey Tezayin, says whatever is chotetz by tefillah is chotetz by kiddush yadayim v'raglayim. We asked, does eating kachim need washing? So the Meshech Chachma and Shmos, Perek Lamin, Pasuk Yutes, says achilas kachim does need washing. Albeit maybe without the legs, maybe not the adayim viraglayim midaraisa. He has a whole sifrei to prove it from, and then the funny process of how you do it. We discussed it. It's the Gemara in Zvachim 19b. How do you makadosh korn in Tanakama? You put your right hand on your right leg, your left hand on your left leg, and you get it all according to Rosh Yehuda. You do the whole thing in one shot. So we say, why would other opinion not say that? Because leaning is smicha. It's not amida. You need to stand. Okay, then we talked about using other clay sharis for the washing Kiddush Yadayim Raglayim. Mistama, it's okay. We talked about where the kior was placed. We talked about how the kior was placed between the ulam, the antechamber, and the mizbeach. So we talked about what if you're going to allow other kalim, do they have to be in that same spot? Is it a din in the makom? So the Meshech Chachma says, mamish a din in the makom. It has to be there. It says, v'nasata shama mayim. It's got to be over there. The Rav Vosner in the Shir Sheva Salevi says, the Brisa 20 beast, if you're Mekadish Adav Raglav B'chutz, it doesn't work. What, says Rav Vosner, do you learn from that? Great deal. It's only chutz that's no good. But it doesn't mean I mamish have to wash in that same place by the Ulam and the Mizbeah. That place is mamish me'akev. Okay, and then we talked about how the kior looked. The Gemara in Yoma 37a talks about Ben Katan, who made 12 spouts around to the kior. Why? Because Rashi says it was pragmatic reason. There were basically always 12 Kohanim who were working the Korban Tamid. Okay, part of a bigger machlokas, not for now. Then we talked about the important shir, which I don't know why we got so late to talk about, should have talked about earlier, which was the sugya of Avodas Hashchita. The avoda, what's the status of avodas hashchita itself? So here was the main sugya. We set it up like this. Zvachim chaf tes amid beis. In the context of pigul, we know that we need all four avodas, hamatir akorban, we need them all to be done properly. One of the four is the shchita. You need all four. One of the four is the shchita. So we say, is the shchita something intrinsic to the avoda? Right? Or is it just there, like shchita by a regular animal? When you're having a piece of meat, when you're having basar, is the shchita just there to make sure that the animal isn't an avela? Right? What's the nature of the shchita? What? Oh, so that was one of the nafkaminas. We saw numerous nafkaminas. We talked about shchitas gistera, strange case of shchitas gistera. We talked about whether the blood is going to be sanctified to the shchita. That's also a nafkamina. Okay, this was the main sugya. We discussed in Eben Ezel there, the brisker rav. We talked about shchitas Rabbeinu Ephraim, that since the animal already has kedushas aguf via the dibor, there's no need for kedushas kli sharis via the shchita. Okay, we talked about Shchitas Rambam. We talked about the line. What is Shchitas Lav Avoda? There's a line. Shchita Lav Avoda. What do you mean? Shchita is the Avoda. I can't think of anything more famous in the Mizbeah, in the Korban process, than the Shchita. Yet you have this line popping up all over Shas. Shchitas Lav Avoda. Zvachim 14b, Menachos 6b. What does that mean? So Rashi says what it means is just, it's not Avoda. Of course it's Avoda. But it's not Avoda in the sense that it's Kshera Bazar, that it's mutter by a non-Kohen. Rav Yaakov, that's Rashi's opinion. Rav Yaakov Meorlins says Shchitas Lav Avoda means because the Shchita by Kachim is the same as by Shchitas Chulin. It looks the same. It's just a borrowed phrase, Lav Avoda. It's not an Avoda-like action. You know it from when you shecht meat during the week. So the Achronim have a whole field day. We saw Sfas Emes. What is Rav Yaakov Meorlins saying? Then there's Shchitas Tosis, who gives his own shot in what Shchita Lav Avoda he says that since the one who stands in the south and then sticks his hand in the north and does shchita that way, you see that there's a hakpada is not on the shochet, but more on the maisa shchita. So a shchita lav avoda is just, it's more a practical concept than what it means as far as the maisa shchita itself. The next shir we talked about was what's the status of kotche akum. A fascinating thing, that the non-Jews have a relationship with the Beis HaMikdash, with Avoda, that we find by Kachim that just like a Jew could be Mekadosh and offer an animal, so too a non-Jew. They can make it even pledge for an animal for a Bama, and it would have special Kedusha. But we said there are distinctions in the Korban of a non-Jew versus that Jew. And Mr. Banks got to the heart of the issue, what the Achronim were discussing. What was the heart of the issue? Are they based on the premise, the following, that Maisa HaHekdesh Shel Nachri Mugbal B'Kocho, that, here, this is the Chakira. The Hekdesh of a non-Jew, is it the same as a Hekdesh of a Jew, just it has a little bit more limitations? Or is it a separate rogue thing that was given to a non-Jew? Nothing to do with the Jewish Hekdesh as we know it. That is the Chakira you need for the Sugya. It's the key to the whole Sugya. All the Nafkaminas, we saw the Karen Ora and all that. And then we went to the topic of non-Jews in Nedarim. Mishnah Lamelech pointed out, how could the neder be chal that's mechayev him to bring? If this is based on a neder, the fact that you have to bring a korban is because you made a neder, that you're offering this to the Beis HaMikdash. But the non-Jew isn't obligated by Baal Yichal. He's not obligated in that. So, I understand if he says, Hare zu ola. But as far as himself, Hare alai, he's not in the parsha of Hare alais, that he has to obligate him things. So that's a problem. Mishnah Lamelech raises a great kasha. Maybe you could only say, the reason he brings a korban is not because he obligated himself to, but just because he stam wants to. Yes.
When he said Hari Alai, he puts himself in the parsha. That's.
We said that. Did we say that last time?
I'm...
That's good. That's good.
Does that put it on the chapter?
What?
Convey the status
of the edge of it.
He doesn't need to on the chevtza. Hare alai is a lashon on the gavra. The chevtza we know he could do. That's other parshas and shvuas that he could do, that a goy could do. Hare zu ola. The problem is him. How's he obligating himself in a korban? Hare alai. He's not in that parsha. Ooh, that's good.
On the fringe of the parsha. In other words, we don't want to put him in the parsha because then we'd be metarif the
parsha. So we saw the avni meluim. Tell me this is the same thing or not. The Avni Meluim says the Ikar Asiba, the main reason why one has to fulfill their pledge to bring an animal by a Jew, the main reason is not because of Baal Yichal. but rather because amiraso ki hischayvus mamonis lahavias a korban sibol etzorach gavoa, meaning amiraso legavoa kamisiris. Your word is like as though you handed it over to someone else. That becomes a dine mamonis issue. Once that's a dine mamonis issue, that applies even by an andre. That's a different answer. That's not what Mr. Bank saying. That's the avne miluim. Okay? That's the avne miluim. We had that back and forth. We pointed out with the stira between the avne miluim and the shev shmeitza and the solution of the stipler by din hektish doesn't need to aid him. Fine. Lead aside for now. But we definitely have a new answer. Anybody have a pen? I got one. Just so we don't forget. What's your Hebrew name?
Michal.
The Rambab.
I like Mab.
He puts himself in the Parsha.
I mean, Ben Laden could have brought a Corbin.
That's right.
Why?
He could put himself in the Parsha.
Good.
Anybody. Or anybody. Jeez, or anybody. Close. All right, then we talked about goyim and shlichus. Are goyim considered the bilim over their korban, just like a Jew is by theirs? What would be the nafkamina? A machshavas of shinoi bilim. That's going to be possible by a korban. That would be the main nafkamina. We discussed the Bar Yitzchak and Rosh Shlomo Eger. Discussing which animals, shlomim versus olos for a non-Jew, and then we talk about kaparis Yisrael. Could he bring it to mechaper for Yisrael to help a Yisrael be mechaper, a wealthy non-Jew? We discuss that case. Then we discuss the case of chatzitza ba'avoda. So the Gemara in Zvachim, the Mishnah in Zvachim 15b says all the psulim for avoda, and among the list is standing on kalim or on the legs of behema or on the legs of his friend. So Rashi says Yosha, that's the psul, is because of chatzitza. Right, the psul is chazah chatzitza. Then we talked about when King David sanctified the floor, so he said so too the kli sharis. And we talked about what was the status of the area on the floor. What if you lifted up the boards on the floor? How far did the kiddush do over there? We discussed all these fancy things. We discussed the concept of Rashi. He says the dinin chatzitza, the gedder of the psul of standing on kalim. Tosfos says it's an interesting split. Rashi says the problem is chatzitza. Tosfos says no, there's a din of being omed ala ritzpah. It's not about chatzitza. It's that you need to be standing on the ritzpah. We discussed what's the difference between the two, and the Chazanish talked about another problem. Maybe it's ein derech sheiris bekach. That's not the normal way you do the service. By standing like that, it's not a problem of chatzitza. It's ein derech sheiris bekach. That's not the normal way. We discussed some nafkaminas. If the Kohen isn't standing in a way that's derech covered. So you see, if it's a problem for him to stand in a way it's not derech covered, that's not a chatzitza issue. That's a amida issue. If one is standing on a bima, so that's not derech sheiris, but it's a bima issue. We discussed the Kohanim, they need to be on the floor. Fine, that was that issue. Then the shear of machtzis ha-shekel. That was a go. I have to say that was one of the best ones of the year. Machtzis ha-shekel, what time is it here? Here, a couple minutes. So, question number one. In the Hakdamah L'Mishnah Torah, Rambam says that the Sefer Azmanim is defined by mitzvahs that are attached to a Zman Mesuyim, a certain time. So we know from Hilcha Shkalim that Shkalim are only during the Beis HaMikdash. That's a Zman Mesuyim. That's an Avoda, right? It's not a Zman Mesuyim, on the contrary. It's a Beis HaMikdash mitzvah. So what's the laws of Hilcha Shkalim doing in Sefer Zmanim, right? It should be by Avoda. And if you want to say it still is a Zman de Shkolim, because there were times when they were supposed to remember to bring it, so why are women putter from Kola over Al Pikudim, right? They have a pasuk that exempts them. Kola over Al Pikudim, since the women don't go out to war, they don't break their Shkolim. They should be exempt, because it's a mitzvah asei shazman grama, iman of shach. The third question we asked, why in the Sefer HaMitzvos is a place between the Moedim and the mitzvahs of Manhigim, the Navi, the Melech, the Beis Din HaGadol. Question number four, why is it only attached to there being a bias? But if it's there to be for the Korban HaSetzibor, don't we say the possibility of Makrivin, Afal Pi She'ein bias? Therefore the Shkalim should have a possibility then as well. Number five, if the source is kola over al pikudim, why are the Levim obligated to give a machsa shekel? Question number six, if that's the source and the references to those who serve in the army 20 to 60, why does a bar mitzvah boy give a half machsa shekel? Number seven, Rambam Aleph Aleph, you can't give it in pieces. It has to be in one shot. Why? What's the difference? Question number eight, the Rambam says you use the coin of the time. No matter if the value is much higher. Why? Because it says shekel hakodesh, meaning use the value of what it was back then. Why are you using the value of what it is now? Meaning, why is the focus on the machtsa shekel as opposed to the value of the machtsa shekel? That was another question we asked. And question number nine, a father who starts to give on behalf of his son, the Rambam says, doesn't stop until his son becomes bar mitzvah. He has to keep giving. Why? We never find it anywhere else. If the father starts, shaking a lulav for his son, he doesn't have to keep shaking every single year. What does that mean? If he does the shekel, why that mitzvah? So we had a whole mahalach, a whole fancy mahalach over here, which you have to listen to shir to get the mahalach. It takes around 25 minutes to explain the mahalach, but I have to say it was a good shtickle. We then did the sugya of im olu lo yardu, things that go on the mizbeach, which things if they go on when they shouldn't have gone on, don't come back down. Because they're pustle or whatever reason, some things go up and don't come back down. Some things that go on there, im olu yardu, you take it right off. We discuss what's the source for that. Rabbi Yehuda's opinion is from Zos Hi Aola, where he gets out which things come off. We discussed Kamitza and Haman, some of the Chakiras of the regarding Kamitza. Haman, we see the Gemara of Haman in Megillah Tesla and Medalef, that Mordechai is teaching about Kamitza when Haman walks in over there. We discussed what's the significance of that idea there. We discussed the kamitza between the fingers. It's stuff which is suffix stuff. And we tied that into the famous idea of Bena Shmashos. Bena Shmashos is not suffix. Bena Shmashos is part day, part night. It's not suffix day, suffix night. It's part day, part night. It's a new entity called part day, part night. And we said the stuff between the fingers by the kamitza is the same din. It's not suffix kamitza, suffix ena kamitza. It's both. It's yes kamitza, no kamitza stuff. Which created interesting situations. We discussed some Chassidish Torah on the significance of Haman and the Kamitza. We saw the Koshnitzer Magid on it, why he went into the whole Kamitza, what to do. We did Para Aduma. We discussed the whole sugya of Para Aduma. The main Chakira we discussed by Para Aduma, who remembers the main Chakira there, was... Oh, para and chatas. How much does the para duma relate to a korban chatas? Right, chatas got para duma or not? It's totally different. We have to relate back to the sugyas which equate the two, and some sugyas which make a difference between the two. We talked about the Targum Yonasan, who says you need to check yud ches treifus by a para, yud ches treifus by a, and then we use this as a segue to ruba v'chazaka ruba adif by the din of rove and relying on chazakas by a para duma. That was that sugya, and then after that, let's see, we were closing up, we're almost finished. We had a couple Korban Pesach sugyas, and that's it. I think the last sugyas we did were Korban Pesach. There was nothing new after the couple Korban Pesach sugyas, if I'm correct. Yeah, we stopped with Pesach. That was it. So that was the entire Kachim. Of course, there's obviously more than what we just said in the last hour or whatever. We have to just give the Rosh Prokim, but basically they all should be there by the Shir. A shkoyach for those who made it this far into the Kachim, and those who listened online or wherever they're listening. Kachim was an experiment. We thought it would last maybe 3-4 shirim at most, but we're still here. No one's suffering from the food, and that's it. Bli neder, we will take one.